Reading from Bhajan Rahasyam, describing Chaturtha Bhajan Yam. Bhajan according to the fourth verse of Shikshastakam, Nadanam Najanana Sundaram Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye Mama Janamani Janamani Shvare Bhavatad Bhaktira Hoitakitvayi. And in this verse, we were describing the meaning of some words yesterday, Nadanam Najanam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his son Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati were saying that Dhanam and Janam refer to Dharma and art and also Kam. That in these two words, Krishna Chaitanya, he annihilates all of our attachments in the material world. Nadhanam na janam. So here is any arta, Dharma, Artha, Kama. These are the three of the four goals of human life. Sometimes there's different ways this is looked at. Some people say that Dharma leads to Artha, and Artha leads to Kama, and Kama leads to Moksha. It's also described that each one of these is four independent goals. The Dharma in itself is a goal. That some people are happy to be pious and religious. Whether they have money or they don't have money, or opulence or wealth, they don't care. But their aim and objective is to be a good man, to be pious, to be religious. I live simply unreligious. They don't want moksha. They don't want sense gratification. They're just, I want to be a good guy. Just be happy, be peaceful, or be religious. So they're very much attached to Dharma, and specifically the Dharma that's described in the Varna and Ashram Dharma. And other people, their goal in life is artha, art. This is a separate way of looking at these things. So these are four independent goals of the human endeavor. And you can also link them together and say they're consecutive. From religion or worshipping demigods, then one gets benefits. Those benefits translate as artha, or access to enjoyment. And then with those benefits, then one enjoys. And then if one is frustrated or tired of that enjoyment, then he seeks something more, another type of enjoyment called moksha. But that's really... Moksha itself is another type of enjoyment, but of a higher order. And also Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha are described as independent of each other and as unique pursuits. As they say, Chatur Purushartha or Panchama Purushartha. Purushartha or Chatur Purushartha means the objectives of the human being are four. There's four objectives or there's five. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the fifth one, Panchama Purushartha. So in this categorization or analysis, each artha is independent of the other, as I already mentioned. So to go back, Dharma in itself is the goal, just to be dharmic, to be religious. The term is called Dharma Dwaji. Dwaj means flag. You fly the flag. I'm a religious man. I'm simple man. I am poor man. You're a rich man. You give me donation. And there's one Baba here from Orissa, Sri Krishna Das Pandit. He's been here for many years, and the rumors have it that he has several crores in the bank because he has many wealthy disciples from Orissa, ministers of agriculture, etc. And his temple is near Radhavallabha's temple on that gully there. And he goes around with his stick, and he's quite highly educated and was a famous pundit, but now he's in his sunset years. And retiring, so to speak. But he's still a little feisty. So when you meet him on the road, he'll stop. And I know him. I was sometimes interviewing him for different reasons. In his own language. And getting translations. So when I meet him, I pay obeisances. And I stand up and he said, I'm a poor man. You're a rich man. You give me donation. Remember, you were with me? Were you with me when we met him? Anybody you were with? Oh. You'll see. And usually, sometimes I have money and I give him something. And when I'm doing Prakrama, sometimes I don't. If it's just Radhakun. I say, oh, I have nothing. No, you have. And then he even grabs my arm. You give something, 1 rupee. And this is the same man that has 10 crores, $3 million in the bank in fixed deposits. Right here in Radhakun. So for some people, they're happy to be poor. But they're happy to be religious. So Dharma is their goal. They don't want moksha or fabulous sense gratification or elevation to swarga for enjoyment. They're doing Dharma for Dharma's sake, and they just want to be known as a religious man, Dharma Dwaji. And there's other people that art, that their objective is money. There's a lot of people like that, that their goal is money. And they don't care about religion or irreligion. Whatever it takes, beg, borrow, or steal, make a profit. Sell your grandmother, sell anybody or sell anything that moves and make a profit. Well, that's art. Their goal is money. And you see sometimes people are fabulously wealthy, but they don't enjoy. They don't even know how to enjoy. These you know, Guptas and other kind of people, they work and they make fabulous money, crores of money, because their goal is just money. If they have a million, their goal is to make 2 million. And they just make their money. It's like the proverbial miser. He just takes his gold coins and holds them in his hands and drops them before him. He never spends them. Although he could buy jet planes and boats and yachts. He lives in some shabby little house at the edge of some dead end street in some village somewhere. And he has like crores and crores of money in the mattress and in the underground and everywhere. And that's his goal, his art, just lots of wealth. But he doesn't even enjoy. And some people, their only objective in life is calm. That is, eat, drink, and be merry. I don't care, religion, money, any way I gotta be merry, I do it. So their goal is calm. Then other people, their goal is moksha. And of course, to attain moksha, then they have to follow some dharmic path. Otherwise it's not possible. So that's what they want. They don't want God per se, but they want the object the religiosity will give them, which is the pleasure of moksha. And they want moksha. So here, in these words, nadanam najanam, this is dharma, art, and kama is all rejected here. In Bhajanarhasyam, because these are impediments to uttam bhakti, and these have to be eliminated, because to accept pure devotion, and so many things we have to eliminate and cut off so many things that are within us. We're carrying so many attachments to dharma and artha and kama and moksha, which are represented by these words in this verse, nadanam, najanam, just these two words we've discussed so far. Nadanam, najanam represent teen purushartha, three of the desired objectives, to have opulence and position and wealth, to enjoy fabulously or even minimally, but to enjoy, and then to be famous for a religious stature. Oh, he's a very religious man. He goes to church every Sunday. He gives to the church lottery every year or whatever. They have these things. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in order for us to, these are impediments to ruchi, because we are attached to these things because we have some taste for them. You can't be attached to something you don't have a taste for. Like we're not attached to dog stool. I don't think so. Because we have no taste for it. But we may be attached to, 36 flavors of ice cream from Baskin and Robbins or something. I don't know. I mean, I haven't eaten any ice cream in like 33 years. I haven't even seen it. I don't even know what it looks like or smells like. I mean, but ice cream just means something sweet and cold, right? So now I'm still attached to something sweet and cold. It's not ice cream, it's rasmalai. So rasmalai is like Indian ice cream. They have Indian ice cream, but I hardly ever had it. Kulfi or something like that. You know that kulfi? So whatever it is, so we have these type of taste for different objects of this world, and because of those tastes we become attached, and that's a ruchi. It's ruchi for maya, it's ruchi for the objects of this world. So to the degree to which we have ruchi for those things is the degree to which we don't have ruchi for nam ruchi. And this verse of Shikshastakam represents this platform of bhajan, which is crucial to actually attaining success in our bhajan. Ruchi. No taste for Nam means no taste for Krishna. And no taste for Krishna means no perfection. So then, back to square one. Not exactly square one, but back to another body and trying again at wherever we left off. So it's very imperative that every devotee comes as quickly as possible to the platform of Ruchi. Nam Ruchi. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has collected these verses. And on the onset, some of them may It requires everyone's individual application to derive their own realizations. How this verse will help me get free from this anartha or this impediment. How this verse will take away my taste for this object. I have taste for dhanam or janam, or what to speak of sundarim or kavitam, and they are preventing my taste for the holy name. Of course, if you're relishing Nam Ruchi, then you needn't bother coming over here to this class because, you know, just sit and relish the name for 1 hour. Or come here and chant in our ears, and so we'll listen to your Nam, and then we'll also hear the class, and that'll give us added benefit by hearing your chanting with Ruchi. So this verse, he explains, this is from Naradiya Purana. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a great welfare worker, as we heard, one of the qualities of Sri Haridas Pandit was Vadanyaya, Namo Maha Vadanyaya. There's many people who are Vadanyaya, magnanimous, but there's only one person who is Maha Vadanyaya, and that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Namo Maha Vadanyaya, everybody knows. Right? Namo Maha Vadanyaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya, Namna Gorja, Say Namaha. He is the most magnanimous, because he's giving us the greatest thing, which is Krishna Prem. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a welfare worker and very magnanimous. He saved us a lot of trouble. He's given us 23 verses. If we study these verses and we apply the meaning and teachings of these verses to our own life and during the process of self-analysis, and we chant the holy name in relation to these verses and pray for the mercy of the author of these verses, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, then the idea that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting, that the mercy of these verses and Nam Prabhu and himself and the author of these verses will create the desired effect, which is giving us ruchi for Nam. So in Naradiya Purana, there's a verse here that describes Nadanam. Only accept what you need. This is a title. These verses sometimes are given titles. Only accept what you need. And this is in relation to wealth. Because sometimes wealth is a problem. Money is a problem. We don't have enough, or we have too much, or we need more, or we want more. So he says that one should accept only as much wealth as is necessary to maintain his life. Of course, this is also mentioned by Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamrita and by Krishna himself in Gita, that we should only take what we require. A yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little, or accumulate too much or accumulate, well, can't accumulate too little. You have to accumulate too much. So it's yavatasyat sunirvaha sri kuryat tavarartavat artavit adikye nyun natayam cha chavyate paramartata. A sadhaka who needs to maintain himself will collect only as much wealth and other material necessities as are required to maintain his bhakti. To accept too much or too little will surely make him deviate from his goal. Sahaja jivana jatra nirvaho payogi dravyadi swikara kari bhakta nahe bogi. There's a commentary here which also includes the translation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bengali rendition of this Sanskrit verse from Naradiya Puran in relation to nadanam or wealth. A person qualified for Vaidhi Bhakti should earn money to maintain his life through prescribed virtuous means, that is, according to Varnashram Dharma. It is auspicious to accept assets only according to one's needs. Craving to accept more than necessary creates attachment, which gradually destroys one's bhajan. Accepting less than necessary is also harmful, as it will create insufficiency, which will in turn weaken one's bhajan. Therefore, as long as a person is not indifferent to material things, he should cultivate pure bhakti and accept only those assets that are required to maintain his life. So this is very much like Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. The road of moderation, because dhanam can sometimes be a problem. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakura is saying, if we have any problem with dhanam, then this maybe we have sufficient. We may be living perfectly according to the teachings of this verse. We have sufficient wealth to maintain our health and our environment peacefully so that we can do bhajan. We have money for food, clothing, medicine, and we don't have more than we need, and we don't have less than we need, then we're properly situated. If we have less, then we'll always be hankering for some facility. And our mind will not be peaceful, because we'll always be thinking, oh, I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. When the mind is disturbed, then we can't fix it, or fix our mind on the holy name. So of course, this is a relative, this verse has relative considerations, because the standard of one may not be the standard of another. So the standard that fits with you may not be the standard that fits with someone else. So we can't impose our standard on another, nor can we adopt another standard to be our own. We have to define our own standard of living as devotees and adjust everything accordingly. And the adjustment is done on the basis of where our consciousness moves. Whatever facility we have, if our consciousness moves into the facility and not into Krishna, then it's too much facility. But if our consciousness stays with Krishna and not our facility, then it's enough facility. We find it's an interesting phenomenon here at Govardhan. There are let's not say Babaji, because we don't want to categorize anyone. We'll use a generic term. There are many devotees that come here and live a very renounced life, and they adopt the practice of going around Govardhan, Prikma every day of Govardhan, sometimes once or twice a day. And because they don't have very much, they don't have sufficient facility. They're crowded up, living together in a crowded place somewhere with other devotees. But they're hankering to have their own place. So what they hear is that if they do Govardhan Parikrama every day, then Giriraj will arrange for them to get some facility. And so their motivation for Govardhan Parikrama is not to simply execute a limb of devotion known as Padasevanam, which includes Parikrama. But their motivation is actually to get sufficient facility for bhajan. So because there's some deficiency in their dhanam, their accumulation of wealth or facility, their minds are unsettled and are not able to fix their mind on the holy name or their bhajan. And then what happens is, it's very interesting, the way Yoga Maya or whatever Krishna is working, is that recently, for example, there's one very wealthy Bengali gentleman. And he lost his wife recently, and he's decided to use his wealth to provide facility for devotees. So he has some agents of his, because he's a well-known figure. His face is famous. So he sends some unfamous people as his spies, and they come to Govardhan, and they watch who's doing Govardhan Parikrama every day, to see what, we'll just say devotees, are going around on a regular basis. And if they're going once in a day or twice in a day, then the report is given to the agents or spies, give the report to the rich man. He says, oh, so-and-so, we met him, he's so-and-so, he's from Bengal, he's staying here, and he's going twice a day to Govardhan, and he really needs some facility. So then this rich man buys some land around Govardhan and builds a kutir for him. And so one such person, he was doing a few parikramas a day, and then he was provided a kutir, and a nice kutir, he makes nice, very comfortable kutir, and his own land and everything. And he's continuing, because that may be his part of his bhajan. There's nothing wrong. It was very nice to go around parikrama and chant a lakh of rounds. So that person came here. He was introduced by someone, one of my friends. He said, oh, he's a very poor baba. He does so many parikramas, and he's very sick, and can you give some donation for fruits and this and that? So I gave on the advice, because I have a soft heart, and he was introduced by a friend of mine. Then later I came to find out that he's really quite well situated, and he became greedy. He wanted more dhanam than he needed. Because he was doing Madhukari. In other words, he had a house, he had food, everything. So even his tendency can be there that if one doesn't have enough, then he gets something, then he maybe wants more. So we have to see what we have. Is our consciousness absorbed in our objects or in our objective? This is a nice way to look at it. Radhe. Is our consciousness absorbed in our objects or our objective? So objects are all these. Our objective is a spiritual object. Not really object, but a person. Our objective is the lotus feet of Radharani and her prem seva. And our objects are all the things we have, or the few things we have. So this verse about dhanam is we have to take it in for what it's worth according to our own position. Now here in this verse in Bhajan Rahasyam, each one of these verses, of course, the ones that are from Bhagavatam, as I mentioned, you can read this book, Bhajan Rahasyam. There's another edition of this in English also, Bhajan Rahasyam. And these verses of Bhagavatam, you can cross-reference maybe with other books, but certainly with Prabhupada's book, and see his translation and also his purport to get further illumination on the nuances of meaning and how. Why is Bhaktivinoda Thakur giving us this verse? In other words, each verse in this chapter is a gift from the bhajan realizations and bhajan of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He has come up; these verses have arisen from his heart for us. These are secrets of bhajan. This is called Ruchi Bhajan, Nam Bhajan at the platform of Ruchi. So we're aspiring for Ruchi. So these verses are meant to bring us to that level, to that platform of Nam Bhajan, where we really have taste. Because this comes after Kirtaniya Sadahari. Because verse 3 is Kirtaniya Sadahari, that we have attachment for the name. We have attachment out of duty or out of some ruchi abhas. We have some taste, or out of duty or respect to our guru, or out of a reflection or a shadow of taste. And we may be chanting whenever we can, we chant. And many devotees are like that. They chant. The chanting is always with them, just like in a supermarket or a big shopping center. There's always, what do they call it, mood music, or some kind of, what are they, mood music they call it? There's always music in the background. You go down this aisle or that aisle, it's always some lingo going on. Some passionate music to enthuse you to buy various useless items. So in the same way, a devotee, even at the level of Nishta, Trinadapi Sunichina, which is Nishta, the holy name is his constant associate. It's practically, even a devotee at the level of Nishta, he's not separated from the holy name. So this is one meaning of Kirtaniya Sadahari. It's not that he's not sleeping or bathing or eating, but he's doing these things. But always the holy name is coming through the speakers in the back, up on the wall. The holy name is there when he's bathing. Holy name is there when he's eating. So this is a type of Kirtaniya Sadahari. He takes rest and he plays a tape, and the tape has an endless loop on it. You know, they have these endless loop tapes that go over and over. You know, they keep playing all night long. And it's the Maha Mantra. I remember when I first joined, I used to play Prabhupada's tapes. I found it very attractive. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. It was like, I don't know, maybe it was also very soothing. It was good. It's like medicinal music. I guess it's a bhav. Any devotee has a bhav for his guru. So it's like that. So now, but there may be not really ruchi there, not really taste. We're approaching the name, and the name has become our confidant, has become our associate or friend. But now to actually become firmly established on the platform of ruchi, then it requires lots of illumination. Because we can be chanting a lot. Like some people chant 24-hour kirtan, akanda kirtan, professional kirtaneers. And they chant, they chant and they chant, and they can really chant. But after they chant, for that few hours that they're not chanting, when they take a break, there are lots of dhanamna janamna sundarim. So there may be a lot of chanting going on. Akanda kirtan means no break. And they can really belt out the holy name like you can't believe it. and with great fervor and expertise, and also it's very attractive. But it's obvious that they haven't eliminated the things that are required to be eliminated. Because it goes both ways. To attain ruchi, we have to eliminate these things. And if we have attained ruchi, these things are eliminated. The ruchi eliminates. You know, if we have ruchi for nam, then the dana, jana, and sundarim are gone, because you're absorbed in ahoituki bhakti. And if we don't have ruchi for nam, then we're trying to eliminate these things, right? So this verse in this is text 14 discusses this discusses nadana najana nasundarim kavitam, because this we'll backtrack a little bit also, but these words actually represent the four goals of life. We mentioned dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Moksha is represented by kavitam. Kavitam means poetry, and Sanskrit is very poetic, and it's very attractive. So when something is poetically written, and also presents a concept or an idea which is very enticing, then it is doubly poetic. So if the Vedas are writing about the proposition of mukti or liberation, going to either swarga mukti, to a higher planet where there's more pleasure and enjoyment, or going to Vaikuntha, and various forms of sarupya, samipya, salokya, sharsti, then those are very attractive proposals, very enticing and enchanting. And if those proposals are presented very poetically with beautiful Sanskrit, then they really capture the heart. The idea captures the heart of getting out of here, getting out of here and going to a nice place. It attracts the heart. If you're living in hell and suffering, and someone comes and tells you all about heaven, or say you're living in a slum somewhere in Hungary, a Hungarian slum, which I can't imagine what that is, but must be pretty bad. And someone comes and tells you about the beaches of Maui, you know, the beaches and the rainforest of Maui in Hawaii, and the 2 foot long mangoes and the mangoes this big and all these kinds of tropical fruits and there's no mosquitoes and there's no snakes and there's no, you know, this is Hawaii, there's no poisonous insects and there's no snakes and there's no garbage and there's no, and you may become enticed, you may become attracted. Now if he presents this description in a very poetic way with beautiful poetry to the tune of your language and your own language, then you really become attracted. So this is what the Vedas are all about. Because in advertising, if you want to sell a product, you have to have a nice jingo or lingo to go with it. Da 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 bingo, da 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 jingo. You know, they sing some song, da 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 bingo, da 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 tingo. You know, then everyone catches that song, they start singing about, you know, Levi's or whatever, you know. And so they put it, even sales and advertising, they put it into poetic language. So the Vedas are trying to sell the product, sell you the concept of liberation. Hey, listen, you're bound. You're completely bound by in the karma chakra and samsara chakra. Why don't you get out? But they just said, you can get liberation. Go to swarga. Then it's like, it doesn't attract. So kavitam, the Vedas are actually presented in a very, very poetic way to hypnotize you. Just look at this watch. Just keep your eyes on this watch and listen to my words. You're feeling very, very sleepy. You know, if you've ever seen a hypnotist. So Vyasadeva is the greatest hypnotist. And he's not using a watch, but he's using language, and specifically Sanskrit. And he's hypnotizing everyone with the kavitam. So in that kavitam, he's presenting mukti, or liberation. Nadanam, najanam, nasundaram, kavitam. So therefore, these few words represent the chaturpurushartha, the four goals of human life. So in this verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was meditating on all these words, nadanam, najanam, nasundaram, kavitam, and trying to find a verse which will, in one shot, like the sword of the executioner, the guillotine. And the guillotine, they have one big blade in France in the 1700s. They have a big blade, big razor blade, and they raise it up, and they put your head in a chopping block on the bottom. And the executioner wears a black sheet over his head, so you don't see his face, because maybe he'll come back in next life and bite him like a cobra. So so he wears a black sheet over his head with two holes in it, and then he pulls a rope and it goes shoom, and Wilkinson's sword blades. And your heads roll, right? Heads were rolling in France. So the executioner, he cuts off your head in one chop. So now, as a transcendental executioner, is that it? Executioner? Bhaktivinoda Thakur wants to cut the head off these things with one verse. Nadana Najana Nasundaram Kavitam. One chop. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Annihilate. Complete annihilation. And this is the verse. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 4th chapter, 15th verse. Canto 3, verse 4, text 15. And the title of this verse is The Insignificance of the Four Goals of Human Life. Dharma as a goal of human life is totally insignificant. Tuchavat. And art, accumulation of wealth or money for money's sake, is also insignificant. And kama, to enjoy the senses and party and have a good time, that is insignificant. And even the glorious moksha, which is highly extolled, is also totally insignificant. It is useless to be anxious about attaining the four goals of human life. Sri Uddhava explains this teaching in 3rd canto. Konvishate padasaroja bhajam sudur labor teshu chatushvapiha tatapi naham pravinomi bhuman bhavat patamboja nishevanutsuka. O Lord, it is not difficult for one who has taken shelter of your lotus feet to achieve the four goals of human life: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, which are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Nevertheless, such a person does not desire them. O Great One, he is not concerned with anything other than rendering service to your lotus feet. So, this is the guillotine. All of our aspirations, all of our Purush Arthas are cut to pieces with this verse. Krishna Tavapada Padme Bhakti Ache Janra Chatur Varga Madhya Kiva Aprapya Tanhara Tarapi Tomara Padaseva Matra Chai Anya Kon Arte Mor Prayojana Nai. My Prayojana, this is not my Prayojana. Anya Kon Arte, none of these arts are my Prayojana, my goal. Padaseva. Tomara Padaseva Matra Chai. That's all they want, is the service of your feet. The inherent or intrinsic dharma of the living entity is a tendency to serve, seva vritti, vritti, manovritti, or chitta vritti. This term is very common in yoga shastras and sankhya. Vritti means, sometimes vritti is described as waves or vibrations or tendency. So here it's called seva vritti. The tendency for seva, and that tendency may come in waves also, like ocean waves. On the ocean there are many waves coming one after the other. So someone who's fixed in bhakti, then there's waves of desires to serve Krishna one after the other, seva vritti. So he's saying that this is basically the intrinsic nature of the jiva. That's the definition of dharma, jiva dharma. Once Prabhupada defined dharma as the essential quality of an object. The inseparable quality of an object. In other words, this quality, that's why it's intrinsic. It is primary. If you take this quality away from the object, then the object doesn't have any meaning. For example, the dharma of sugar, or the intrinsic quality of sugar, the inseparable quality of sugar, is sweetness. If you take sweetness away from sugar, it's not sugar. It may be white in color. It may be powdered. It may be crystalline. And it may have all the tatastilakshana, secondary characteristics of sugar. It looks like sugar, it feels like sugar, maybe even smell like sugar, but does it taste like sugar? No. So the atma, the seva vritti, that is the dharma of the atma, this is the essential quality of the atma that cannot be separated. Serve we must. Sometimes they have mottos in different businesses or whatever. I remember the Los Angeles Police Department, on the side of their car, they had a little emblem. It said, Service is our business. Or no, this was it. We are here to serve you. And then you see some policeman on a street corner bashing the head in of some, you know, war protester during the Vietnam War protest, which I was, you know, that was my generation in college in the early 70s. We are here to serve you and also smash your head with our sticks. So this seva vritti is the actual eternal identity of the soul, to serve. And the devotee therefore desires the fifth goal of human life, pancham purushartha, which is prem seva. He does not accept the threefold designations of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Nor does he want moksha, which is free from material designations. The impersonalists strive for sayuja mukti, which a devotee always rejects. Devotees reject the five kinds of mukti, sayuja, sarupya, samipya, salokya, sharshti. He says although the other sayuja is opposed to merging into the Lord's body or his effulgence, is considered to be non-devotional. It's opposed to bhakti. But the other four, they're divided into two divisions. It says sukaishvarya uttara, then prema sevotara. This is sukha aishvarya uttara, liberation tainted with the desire to enjoy the Lord's opulence. That's a fact. It's actually the devotees that want sharsti. They want to be invited. Sharsti means to attain the opulence of the Lord. Oh, gold crowns and diamond-studded belts and gold chariots with six horses and a big palace. That sounds attractive. How do I get that? Well, you have to worship Vishnu with the sankalpa that you want sharsti liberation, sharsti mukti. And you purely worship Vishnu as best you can in Vaidhi Sadhana. And then he's pleased. Okay, that's nice. Okay, come on my planet. Here's your palace. Here's your horses. Here's your gold. Have a good time. That's it. And you stay there eternally. You don't come down. And because that's how they want to relate to the Lord. They want to relate to, that's like Shantaras. It's a type of Shantaras. They don't want to serve. They want to enjoy, to enjoy Vishnu. What of Vishnu? His opulence. Just like the, you know, Kuja, she wanted to enjoy, not with anyone of this world, so that's noteworthy, that she wanted to enjoy conjugally, but not with any man of this world, with God. So that's good. Well, that's called Sadharani Rati. Sadharani means ordinary. Ordinary in the sense that it's extraordinary that she didn't want any other man to enjoy but God, Krishna, and Mathuranath. But it's ordinary because it was tinged with like regular people. She wanted some desire for herself, or a lot of desire for herself. So it's called sadharani, which means ordinary, commonplace. But on another level, it's also extraordinary. So that's her good quality, that she didn't want to offer herself to anyone. Of course, there's long tattva behind it, that she's an expansion of Satyabhama, Bhudevi. So this is the all these liberations are tinted with desire, but spiritual desire, the desire to, like a lot of people want to enjoy opulence. They're artavadis. Artavadis, arta is one of the four goals of human life. They want opulence, but they want it here. I want to be Birla and I want my opulence here in Bombay. I want opulence and lots of it. And then they can follow Karmakanda. Follow the principle of the Karmakanda and maintain their opulent position by appeasing different demigods and yakshas like Kubera and others. and they're blessed. Or even they may worship Lakshmi Narayan, but they say, look, I don't want anything up there, I want it down here. So they'll cash in their credit cards or their blue stamps and enjoy down here. But if they want, or green stamps, what is a green stamp? But if they want to, so that's a rather low class artha, to want to desire in the material world. But some people, they want sharsti, they want to enjoy the opulence of not, they don't want to be rich like Bill Gates in this world, but they want to be rich like Lord Narayan. And obviously, Saloki is included, because they can only enjoy like Narayan on Narayan Loka. And some people, they just want to be where it's happening. You know, where it's happening? It's happening in Goa. So let's go to Goa. You know, you're here in Europe. Hey, if I go, I want to go to India. Where's the happening place in India? I say Goa. So you're not asking for opulence. You don't want to have a palace in Goa. You just want to go to Goa. So that's like Salokya. That's all you want. If I just get to Goa, then that's all I need to do, and the rest I'll figure out. So that's like Salokya. I want to live there. Just get me up out of this place. I'm tired of Harlem. I want to go to Goloka. I read about Goloka. It sounds groovy. It sounds great. Let me go there. What will you do there? I don't know, but it's the place to be. So you'll go to Goloka, but you may be a shoemaker there, because you're not asking for Sharsti. You're only asking for Salokya. So you'll go there. But there's so many things there. You know, Narayan needs to change the shoes of his horse once in a while. So you live in Saloki in a little dumpy house and, you know, change his shoes and get a little, you know, eat a little rice and dal and live there eternally. And once in a while, maybe, you know, when Daruka comes to pick up Vishnu's chariot, he might say, look, you know, Vishnu's going, driving by here to some forest. Why don't you go and you'll get a darshan of him tomorrow? Really? So once in every 5 or 10 years, you make a darshan of Vishnu. It's a fact. This is what Salokya Mukti means. If you read Brihat Bhagavatamrita and other shastras, you'll understand what all these things are. So that's why, when we hear, and we say, we don't forget all that. We just want the Prem, Seva, Radha, and Krishna. And UP, which is not UP, it's Vrindavan. This entire Jagat, at the time of annihilation, it's all annihilated. It's all flooded, burned out. It's first completely burned out. Sometimes devotees get burned out. But it's not like burnt, like Brahma gets burned out also. You know, you get burned out by the temple commander. Well, Brahma gets burned out by Ananta Shesh. Right? Because Ananta Shesh is the temple commander of the universe. And when he lets out some sparks, he's at the bottom of the universe and it's time for devastation. He lets a few sparks out of his, you know, he spits a little poison out of his mouth. And that poison is like, comes out, it's so fiery hot, it's like sparks of fire. And those sparks of fire ignite the entire universe. And when it starts burning, then Shiva says, wow, this looks like a good occasion to dance. And he starts dancing and smashing everything to pieces in a tandavar nitya of destruction. So Ananta Shesh is, because Ananta Shesh is the Ishtadeva of Shiva, so they work together. One's the choreographer, the other's the dancer. Ananta Shesh is the choreographer. That means he arranges a dance or whatever. Master of the dance or arranger or whatever. And the dancer is Shiva. And then who's the audience? Parvati, Ganesh, and Skanda. Yeah, it's a family dance. Parvati claps her hands, and then his son Ganesh goes around trumpets, you know, ah, ah, you know, because he's a big elephant, so he goes around trumpeting. They says trumpeting, that's the term that's used when an elephant lets a roar. You were in Mayapur, you must have heard those elephants sometime. Roar! It sounds like a lion. One time I was in Mayapur, I heard the elephant roar, and I said, the Subhaga, I was like scared, because I never heard in my life, I didn't know. I said, is that a lion or a Bengali tiger? What is that? He said, no, it's Bhavananda's tickling the elephant or something. And the elephant's like roar, you know, it's like a roar, you know. They tickle it and it goes, rah! And the whole building is shaking. I mean, it's like serious stuff. That's an elephant. What to speak of a lion? So Ganesh is trumpeting around here and there. Parvati's clapping her hands and Skanda's saying, Jai Mahadev, Jai Mahadev. So then after the dance, when you dance a lot, the next thing you have to do is take a bath. So like Krishna and Radharani, when they do the Rasa dance, what do they do after the dance? They bathe in Yamuna. Right? Because they want to cool down. So then after the fire comes rain, right? And the whole universe floods and everything cools down and Shiva takes a nice bath, Divya Snan, and he takes rest and that's it. So Brahma gets burned out at that time. And he moves on to another temple. He says, look, I can't stay in this temple. I got burned out of Brahmaloka. I have to get liberated. So this is very summary description of Pralaya. Humorous. But this is actually how it happened. So I think we'll end on this note. Madhuram, Madhuram Samapayat. If there's any questions. Yes.
You spoke about na janam, na janam. This only creates a favorable environment for getting ruchi for nam.
The elimination of these things. Yes. Exactly. That's the point. That this, in other words, if you want to plant, you're saying that if we eliminate our material attachments to wealth and religiosity and varnashram dharma and followers and sense enjoyment and all these material objectives and focus on our objects and focus on our main objective, which is the praying save of the holy name, that the elimination of these items certainly creates a favorable situation for our ruchi to manifest. Because if you say you have 20 bowls of ice cream and someone takes away 19 bowls, there's only one bowl left. Then how many ice creams can you taste? Only one. There's only one before you. So if you eliminate all the other tastes, because these are all different kinds of ruchis, ruchi for wealth and money and women and all these things, men, whatever. So if those are eliminated, then all that's left is nam. So then you can only taste the nam. So that's why it's favorable. There's nothing left to taste. And of course, the name itself, we're only able to eliminate these things by increasing our attachment and practice, or chanting of the holy name. And these verses that we're reading in this chapter are helping us to simultaneously eliminate these attachments, and dandana janam, to eliminate these things, and at the same time increase our taste for the holy name. And both things are working at the same time. The verses of this chapter help eliminate these unwanted things, and at the same time these verses increase our taste for nam.
Isn't it kind of like the principle of displacement, where one thing is going, like you're letting the water out of the bathtub and air is coming in automatically. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, exactly. The name is, basically the name is doing all this. I mean, it's called nam bhajan, so we don't do anything else but nam, which that's it. We're chanting nam throughout all the time, throughout all stages of bhakti, sadhana, bhava, and prema. The gopis and the gopi geet, they're also doing nam sankirtan of such a high order. And we're doing also nam sankirtan, but maybe not a little bit lower order than the gopi geet. Quite a bit lower order. Significantly lower order. But that is the only process. And all these different divisions and chapters and these secrets of bhajan, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving us, is simply to hasten our progress in nam bhajan. There's nothing else we can do except nam bhajan. But to understand the nam and to relate to the nam, because he is namacharya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also namacharya. It's not that only Thakur Haridas is namacharya. Anyone who's teaching the glories of the holy name and absorbed in the holy name, he's also an acharya of the holy name. Guru should be also namacharya. Otherwise, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tadar Pravartan. This is Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Unless the Guru has Shakti, then how can he spread the Dharma for the Kali Yuga? Kali Kalera Dharma Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Krishna Nahi, was it? Krishna Shakti Nahi Tadar. If he doesn't have Krishna Shakti means the potency of Krishna. What is the potency of Krishna? Or who is the potency of Krishna? Radharani. So the most effective distributor of the holy name, or the most effective propagator of Nam Sankirtan, is someone who is a worshipper of Radha and Krishna. That's why it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that there were two classes of followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One is called the Antaranga Bhaktas, and the other is called the Bahiranga Bhaktas. And Shivas Thakur and his group are the Bahiranga Bhaktas, because they represent Dasya Bhav and Sakya Bhav. But Gadadhar Pandit and Nityananda and his group are the Antaranga Bhaktas because they represent Prem. Madhurya Prem. You see that these words are there, Antaranga Bhakti. So it says there in Chaitanya Charitamrita and also Chaitanya Mangal that the Prem Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was best spread by the Antaranga Bhaktas. Sarva Shakti Mayi, because Radharani is the repository of all the Shaktis. She's Adya Shakti, she's the original Shakti. So therefore, someone who's a Radha Krishna Bhakta, either Radha and Krishna themselves combined, Mahaprabhu, or a pure follower of Mahaprabhu, whose Ishtadeva is Radha Govinda, Mahaprabhu or any Radha Krishna Bhakta, they can be the best promulgator or propagator of Nam Sankirtan, because they'll have the most Shakti of Krishna. Because Radharani is the complete Shakti of Krishna. It says Prem Nam Sankirtan.
It's interesting that most of those who are distributing at that level, the kind of bread, they actually get the mercy of Nityananda.
Yeah, well, you have to get the mercy of little sister first. Antaranga Bhakti. Yeah, well, look at this. I mean, look at Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, he actually, as far as Nitya Parishad, he is a member of the inner circle of Radharani. He is a Kayavyuha of Radharani, Rati Mandri, Banamati, Tulsi. But he's showing some teaching for the sadhakas. Although I am directly the expansion of Radharani's body as Kayavyuha. And no one is more intimate and no one is more antaranga, or part of anga means body. And antara means the coming, Kayavyuha means directly expanded from Radharani's body. So no one is more antaranga bhakta than Rati Manjri or Raghunath Das. But yet he's showing the example that for me to move close to Mahaprabhu, or for me to move close to Radharani and Krishna, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I have to go through the mercy of Nityananda. What to speak of us? Because until he attained the blessings and mercy of Nityananda, he could not enter the inner circle with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although he tried, on his own he tried so much. He tried running away once and twice and thrice. And every time Maya would bring him back and tie him by chains or by Lakshmi Devi or whatever. And then again he would run. And again he would come back. And again he would run. He would get captured. So on our own we cannot enter the inner circle. This is a teaching. But if we attain the mercy at the feet of Nityapada Kamalam, Koti Chandra Sushitala, if those very soothing and cooling feet of Nittai are placed on our head, then we can very quickly attain the Holy Dham, which is the first place. You have to go to the Holy Dham, as Kaviraj Goswami attained the Holy Dham by the mercy of Nityananda. And upon coming to the Holy Dham, he attained 10 great gifts, which we discussed in our first class, or second class. He attained the association of Rupa Goswami, who taught him Bhakti Siddhanta. He attained the association of Sanatana Goswami, who taught him Sambandha Gyan. And he attained the association of Raghunath Das. And all these things are mentioned in Adi Leela. So Nityananda's mercy is crucial to become an Antaranga Bhakta, or become a member of the ultimate book distribution team, the ultimate Prem Dharma distribution team. If you want to become a big-time distributor, what do you call it? Big time, or what do they call it? Big book distributor? If you want to become a big time distributor of the holy name, then you have to become a Premi Bhakta of Radha and Krishna. And if you want to become a Premi Bhakta of Radha and Krishna, then it's imperative that one receives the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Anything else? Well, they were apparently that Rupa Goswami and Narayan Bhatta Goswami and Gopal, they were contemporaries. Narayan Maharaj's book, Brajmandal Parikrama Guide, in English, it's also in Hindi, he describes a little bit about Narayan Bhatta Goswami. As far as the detail you mentioned about the production of his book, Braj Bhakti Vilas, uncovering different places of Krishna's pastimes, he did do, as you mentioned. But the book itself, although it does mention that, it is actually based on rather extensive Puranic research. Because in the book, it describes it describes Braj Mandal. In one sense, it's a guidebook to Braj Mandal Prikama. It is the granddaddy of Prikama guides. It's the original, complete picture book of Braj Mandal. It's a complete guidebook to Braj Mandal. So he describes when you're supposed to start your Prikama. Braj Mandal Prikama is to be done in Bhadramas. It doesn't say Kartik, it says Bhadramas. Bhadramas is the month in which Radha and Krishna both appear in this world. And it's really hot. In July and August, it's steaming hot. We went once in 1988 in Kartik with ISKCON Prikama. But before that, in July, we were planning the route with Achyuta Das from the Samadhi. He had a jeep. And Lokanath Swami and I and Radha Raman, who's now a sannyasi, we were kind of working together. And I also took part in that year walking. But we were going around measuring distances between places because that was only the second year. They went in 87 with Padayatra, but it was just a few people. So the first official ISKCON Padayatra, let's say, Braj Mandal Prikama, although it was the second consecutive one, but the first official broader one was in 1988. So they wanted to make it a little more coordinated a little bit. So then we went and we're looking for places to stay and pitch the tents and dharmashala accommodations and old schools, school buildings. We're measuring the distances. So during that time in Bhadramas, we came across different Prikama groups. One was from the Vallava Sampradaya. It was 7,000 people. And they are all moving and they've been doing this regularly. And 7,000 people. We came to another group that was Vallava. I don't know who they were, I forget. But they had 5,000 people. It was a moving city. A small town, I guess you could say. But when they would stop, they would set up all their tents, and everyone had a wooden bed, and everyone had a little Swiss tent. Then there would be five or six tents with doctors, with full tables of medicine. There would be a barber. There would be a hairdresser. And, everybody everything was there. There was sabjiwalas were there, but they just looked like they would set up the sabjis and sell fruits because people would buy things, and everything was there, full facility. And then there would be a stage set up, a temporary stage, and every night there would be Ras Lila and singing. And in the daytime, it looked extremely attractive, but it was really hot. So they generally follow this book, because this is the encyclopedia for Braj Mandal Prikama. So it's telling when to begin, what day and what month. Then it's telling, as you go in each forest, which places you should visit and what sequence, and also what charity you should give in each place. In each forest that you go into, you have to give different charity. In one forest, you visit different deities in different places. You're supposed to give chandi and sona, gold and silver and many things are told and different things. And all that information he's collected is footnoted and told what Purana this is from, Harivamsa Purana or Skanda Purana or this place or that place. So from what I understand of the book, it's extremely scholarly presentation. It's based on lots of Puranic work. Whether or not he showed that book to Rupa Goswami for approval, I can't say. He may have. But that's what is the content of the book. It's like the official manual for proper, maybe say, karmakanda or whatever, proper observance of Braj Mandal Prikama according to Vidhi, Shastric Vidhi. Because generally these type of yatras and prikamas are done by grihasthas. And they want to attain some punya, lots of punya. So they want to do the right thing and the right place at the right time. Because the dan and tapa are like that. The karmakanda is like that. And bhakti is not sakama. In bhakti, we're not doing any activities of bhakti for personal desire. It's no sakama. So it doesn't matter when you start it. Like Bhagavad Sapta, if you're going to observe, hold the Bhagavad Saptaha for sakam, you want some personal desire, and there's a lot of things you can get from that. Then you have to start on, it must be held in Shukla Paksha, and it has to start in Dvitiya, and you can't have class on Ekam, Ekam and Dvitiya, there's no class. There's certain days you can't have class in Bhagavatam. And you have to follow all these rules and regulations. Then you'll get your result of that desired result. But if you're only holding a Bhagavad Sapta just for the glories of the Bhagavatam, just to hear the Bhagavatam, then you can start on any day and end on any day. Bhakti for bhakti's sake, because bhakti is transcendental. Bhakti is completely transcendental. It doesn't depend on any. It's beyond all karma and jnana. Anya vilashita shunyam karma jnana karmadi anavritam. It's not covered by any of the restrictions or rules and regulations of karma or jnana. Any time, anywhere, we can do bhakti. Right?